Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I am your host, Paige, and together we are going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and most importantly, ourselves. Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning into episode 39 of the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast. Today we're talking about astrology and how it relates to psychology and the study of your personality. And I've got a new book review of Shadows for you, and we're going to be talking about The Little Book of Saturn by Lisa Einhorn, which really earned its 5 crystal ball rating in its very little package, so I'm pretty excited. In general, I'm really excited for this episode. Actually, not only is this the first episode of 2019, which is like super exciting. Happy New Year, everyone. This is kind of in keeping with a series or a common theme in my last few podcast episodes, which is the ways that spirituality already affects our reality and the world around us, whether people believe in it or not, and how accessible magic and spirituality is to everyone. I'm also trying to show that belief in magic or spirituality or astrology or ghosts or whatever doesn't have to mean an absence of science or, mathematics or medicine or logical thinking. It doesn't have to mean that you forego all of that. In episode 36, so a few episodes back, I shared a quote by Fritjof Capra that goes, "Science does not need mysticism, and mysticism does not need science, but man needs both." Oh, it still just plays through my head all the time. And what I love about this quote and this idea is that it doesn't say that each individual person needs both, though balance is always nice, but that we as humans need both to enrich our lives. That is such a great idea because it means that we're still all connected and we're still fulfilling this role that contributes to the entire human race. Really fun. I recently watched a really fantastic docuseries on Netflix called Hijos de las Estrellas, which is in Spanish, and I hope I pronounced that right, and is about different Mesoamerican cultures throughout time and all around the Americas and their relationship with beliefs about the stars and the cosmos. And in every single episode, they talk to historians, indigenous peoples, scientists and astronomers, and people who still practice and believe in a lot of these things. Like every episode, they combined all of those things. They perfectly blended mystical and magical belief and scientific research. Unfortunately, Netflix has since removed it, which is so brutal. I managed to watch the entire thing before it got removed. And in an episode about astrology that featured spiritual practitioners, astronomers, psychologists, this one just really, really pulled me in. I've been super interested in astrology lately. Well, really forever, but I never really dug much further into it. I was reading my horoscope and that's about it. So this episode was really great because we meet a skeptic. He's from Chile. He's from a skeptic society out there. And he seeks to spread the message of believing in science and the value of, provable things and ignoring mystical ideas and magical thinking. And astrology is considered, a junk science, which it is considered a junk science by a lot of people, not just him. Whatever. But he kept asking the same question. What has astrology contributed to society? Science explained the universe, and science tells us where humans came from and what the earth is made of, and science and astronomy explained the Big Bang, the origin of the universe. But what about astrology? It's really just entertainment. It's not real. You can't prove it. And no offense, because he was actually a really cool guy, but anyone who thinks that astrology has never contributed to our modern society is really sorely mistaken and needs a history lesson, for sure. I love history lessons. But before we get into that, I'm sure that there are some of you listening who are either unfamiliar with astrology or maybe unfamiliar just beyond reading your horoscope. Astrology is the study of the movements and patterns of celestial bodies like stars, constellations, planets, asteroids, even like blank spaces, and interpreting what that means for human affairs and the natural world. Are there coincidences? Are there things that are related? It's not considered a science. Maybe an art, but definitely not a science. Astronomy, on the other hand, is the study of the physical universe, so the planets and the stars, but what they're made of or if they could sustain life. And that is considered a science. And it is a science. It's a scientific field. So when you hear astrology, think horoscopes. And when you hear astronomy, think NASA. What's really fun about that is that they used to be the exact same damn thing. And if you want to be real about it, astrology actually existed before what we call science ever existed. Astrology was a respected field of scientific research until about the end of the 19th century. And that still sounds like a long time ago, but in the grand scheme of things, oh my God, it's not. Like a lot of other spiritual studies, when science came out, it was really kind of pushed back. And it got demoted, basically, in value. But the truth is that astrology has existed, as far as we know, for almost the entirety of human existence. Astrology existed before the written word. In ancient Babylon, they had astrology before, you know, they were writing in cuneiform. If it weren't for astrology, we genuinely would not have calendars. We wouldn't have the calendars we do. Imagine. Our work weeks would be different. The names of the days would be different. The length of the year would be different. There would be no Mayan calendar, so we wouldn't have had that really cool, like, Armageddon scare. The ancient Egyptians would have been just as boring as we are. The pyramids might not have been built at all because there was astrology factored into their construction, right? Galileo would be literally no one. Telescopes and astronomy, that might not even exist, because without astrology, there would be no long-standing human tradition of just looking up and going, huh, I wonder what's up with that. Ours is probably, in this century or so, one of the first major societies in human history that does not employ some type of astrology. And value it as something, no pun intended, astronomically important. Isn't that wild? And when I heard that, because someone said that in that episode of the docuseries, when he said that, I thought about it, and I thought, that is probably one of the wildest things I've ever thought. It's only for the last 100 years or so, you know, a little more than that now, that astrology was considered a junk science, and that those who are interested in astrology were not considered respected, you know, researchers or doctors or any of that stuff. It's very, very new, and yet many people act like it's always been junk, but it hasn't. I also do not think it's a coincidence or just a coincidence that around the time that we stopped believing that the universe and Earth was deeply connected and that the planets in the sky affect our planet and vice versa, that we really started brutally exploiting all of our planet's resources. The Industrial Revolution and our break from astrology as science literally happened simultaneously. Now, I'm not saying that not believing in astrology will cause the collapse of humanity, but isn't it kind of interesting how that happened? But astrology has actually had another direct effect on a field of study that is very important to the survival of our society, and that is psychology. Psychology and philosophy, I think, just go together so, so well, and this is going to be another one of those times we talk about it. So Carl Jung, who was the founder of analytical psychology and was a one-time pupil and friend of Sigmund Freud, once wrote that astrology represents the sum of all the psychological knowledge of antiquity. He believed that the belief in, the mythology of, and most importantly, the symbols of astrology were something ancient that all humans could tap into. Jung developed a theory of what he called the collective unconscious, And this is just like it sounds. We all have an unconscious mind, you know, a part of our mind whose processes we really don't have waking knowledge of. This is the part of your mind where dreams come from, for example. But what Jung proposed was that there was also a collective unconscious mind that all beings of the same species can access. Doesn't that sound a lot like intuition and instinct, the stuff we usually say is hardwired into our DNA? I think so. It's reminiscent. So within the collective unconscious are these symbols and thoughts and histories of humankind and human life and our evolution. This collective unconscious is the reason for things like shared mythologies and stories across continents, or universal body language and nonverbal communication, and the fact that humans everywhere looked up and realized that the cosmos, the planets, the stars, all of that was working in tandem with them. This is also where we find what Jung called archetypes. I talked about archetypes before. We talked about the Queen of Swords. Carl Jung was the one who came up with this idea of archetypes, and astrology was a really great example of this idea he had. So in astrology, we have these 12 zodiac symbols. They all represent different things, or rather different types of people and their traits or personality or their experiences. And there's often this idea, you know, how could there be only 12 types of human beings in the world? How could 12 things represent every person in the world? But I mean, everyone isn't just that one sign that we know from the morning paper. We all have all the signs and the planets and all that stuff in our personal birth charts. The birth chart is like an astrological snapshot of the position of the cosmos at the time you were born. So these archetypes not only represented different people, but different ways of being human, different personality traits. These archetypal images were part of the collective unconscious and help us understand each other and ourselves and how we relate to each other and ourselves. And they also provide us with a connection to not just our fellow human beings, but the whole of the universe. Isn't that beautiful? I think it's really nice. And it also offers a better explanation of things like, ooh, like how so many religions, gods, and heroes from different parts of the globe have so many similarities. Almost every continent has, you know, a sun god or a son of god. Everyone went through a great flood. Everyone had visitors from the stars. Everyone followed the precession of the stars and the planets to create similar calendars. Even specific stories, like Atlantis. Okay, Atlantis was what? It was a beautiful, super advanced city that was essentially destroyed by the hubris of men and became a secret oasis with myths of riches and magic and enlightenment. Just like, you know, everywhere has that story. El Dorado, Shambhala, these places exist on every continent, seemingly, and that's wild. So it's not this idea that, you know, all religions are the same, there's only one religion, and everyone is just repeating someone else's stories. It's more like we are all telling everyone's story. We're all getting bits and pieces from this collective unconscious, and we're sharing it. And we should be bringing it all together, and instead we use it to separate each other, which is, you know, a whole other thing. Just a whole other thing. So Jung's theories about archetypes and the collective unconscious, they definitely straddled the line between accepted science and pseudoscience, depending on who you asked, and they still kind of do. But we still use a lot of his words and his theories and his ideas now in ways that people think are not astrology, but, you know, science. And that is the idea of personality types. These archetypes, these personality types. Are you an introvert or an extrovert? That was Jung. He came up with this idea. He synthesized these astrological archetypes into more down-to-earth or easy-to-understand ones by grading people on whether their personality was focused inward or outward, if they were more prone to analytical thinking or instinctive or intuitive thinking, if they were more of an emotional person, if you're more open-minded, if you like finality and closure. He also used common symbols that are universal, like the mother, the tower, the trickster, to wrap these traits up in these neat little like archetypal characters that everyone could relate to, because they come from everyone, right? They come from all of us. And if any of this sounds familiar, it's because all of this work and these theories were the foundation on which the Myers-Briggs personality type test was built. The Myers-Briggs personality test is so popular with people who think astrology is bullshit that it seriously cracks me up. Businesses use this thing to find out how to manage their employees, learn more about their employees, learn their employees' strengths or weaknesses. And I promise you, it's just astrology. It's just as, you know, provable as astrology. I saw someone on Twitter joke that the Myers-Briggs is astrology for people who went to business school. And like, bingo, there it is. That's exactly it. And you know where I see the Myers-Briggs the most? Tinder. Every third guy on Tinder has their Myers-Briggs type in their profile, which is like wild. It's like, it's right there. And then I can look it up online and see that, like, you know, I can find out everything about his personality. So this test that you take, it's the most widely taken personality test, you know, on the planet. Unlike astrology, it asks you questions and you indicate how you react in certain situations and with certain people and et cetera, et cetera. So instead of looking at where the stars were when you were born, you look at actual things about yourself that you can admit, which is definitely a variable that isn't so good, that isn't so good with this, because you can lie. And so when you complete this test, you get a 4-letter type indicator and like a big old 5-page printout on what your type's archetypal symbol is. Seriously. So I am apparently an INFJ, which is also called the Advocate, and the little dude looks like a wizard. So my business astrology sign is wizard. Thanks. This means that I am introverted, intuitive, emotional, and empathetic, and then I like to follow instructions and work with a plan. It also means I'm ambitious, but still strictly follow my own personal values, not super concerned with money. I'm organized, dependable, and enjoy intellectual stimulation. Can you tell if that was a description of INFJ or taken from a description of Capricorns? I won't tell you which one it is. Or if it's a little bit of both, I won't tell you. The point is that definitely does describe me. And it describes me just as clearly as any description of my astrological sign does. And that's because it taps into an archetypal image that all human beings can relate to. It's doing the same thing as astrology. Now, where would all those dudes on Tinder be without their pedantic business astrology? If it wasn't for regular shiny star astrology, you know, they'd just have to tell you they're an Aries or a Libra like a common peasant. So thank you, Carl Jung. I'm kidding. I'm not actually talking trash about Myers-Briggs, because you know what? I genuinely enjoy it. And I love that people are finding something that helps them explore their personality in a way that makes sense for them. When you get that Myers-Briggs score, so I've seen things online, little like, you know, memes. What is your Myers-Briggs score based on your zodiac sign? And first of all, they're bullshit. And the people who write them know they're bullshit. Don't worry, it's a fun joke. That little 4-letter word is not really, you know, comparable to your sun sign. That 4-letter word and your archetype and that, you know, 5-page printout, that's more like your birth chart. That's your business astrology birth chart. I'm really laughing at this idea of business astrology now. I like my Myers-Briggs score. You know, INFJ is supposed to be the rarest and the most, you know, weird of all the signs. Almost everyone I talk to is an INFJ, and I'm sure if I took the test again, I'd get something different. But I really do like it, and I really do like personality tests, so I'm not talking that much trash. I'm just saying. That's what this idea of archetypes and the collective unconscious is all about. It's, you know, that it's the sum of all psychological knowledge of antiquity. It's our collective story and our collective symbols, and they can change and they can adapt to any human environment. It's just a different delivery system for the same information, one that doesn't require someone to pull out a telescope and calculate the trajectory of planets. You don't, if you don't like math and astrology is too hard, go for your Myers-Briggs. But they do come from, first of all, they come kind of from the same place, the same symbols. And it's just it's a reminder to connect with people using that rather than disconnecting, because tapping into that information is connecting with people already. Very cool stuff. So as far as the planets and the stars affecting our movements here on Earth, Carl Jung had a better theory for that too, which he called the theory of synchronicity. Isn't that cute? Synchronicity. It's not that, you know, Mercury goes retrograde and this big blast of backwards Mercury energy shoots out of the planet and hits us here on Earth and changes how things are working. You know, there's no blast of light that breaks your computer, although it seems like that sometimes. It's more like if you look through the history of human evolution and compare that to astronomical data, you can see repeating patterns. It's no different than nurses. Okay, if you talk to nurses who notice changes in patients during the full moon, and almost any nurse who works in a hospital will tell you that full moon nights, they have more staff on, you know, people are on alert and things get a little bit weird. And actually, when I worked at a witch shop a couple years back, there were these women that came in a lot and they were prison guards. A whole bunch of really awesome lady prison guards. And they came in to buy crystals, among other things. But straight up, these women were like, okay, I need a really badass stone to protect me, but it can't be like a weapon. So, so we'd have to make sure that it was relatively small and it was smooth and it couldn't be confused as a weapon. And we'd dig through things like tourmaline and smoky quartz. Super fun. They all mentioned that they didn't want to go to work around the full moon on the night shift without something like that. Something, you know, the full moon affecting all the patients like that didn't make a lot of sense. So why not get something that makes just as much sense to help us with it? That's what I think. Some of the other guards had things like good luck charms. Like someone had a lucky rabbit's foot, and another woman kept a lock of her baby's hair in her pocket, in her uniform, because it made her feel safe. And inmates were more difficult and rowdy during the new moon. So they would carry these like magical talismans. Isn't that neat? They were some of my favorite customers, was like just this whole pack of prison guards that worked at a local, well, prison. So it's just like that. It's just like how you notice that human beings are a little bit different around the full moon, but it's just a more extended period when it comes to the movement of the planets. So in that episode of Hijos de las Estrellas, Richard Tarnas, who is kind of infamous for combining psychology and astrology, like now in our modern age, he's only like in his 50s right now, explained that even our far outer planets do have the same kind of effect. We just don't see it as often. It doesn't happen every 28 days. It happens every few years or a few hundred years, depending on which planet it is. Uranus and Pluto specifically have a really interesting pattern that has been following us as far as we know since at least 318 BCE. That is a very long time ago. So whenever these two planets are in either a conjunct or opposite position in the sky, us human beings get into this wacky mood to burn everything down and start from scratch. Considering Uranus is a planet of revolution and upheaval, and Pluto's a planet of death, it seems pretty legit. So the French Revolution, that was Uranus and Pluto. The beginning of the women's rights movement and Harriet Tubman leading slaves to freedom, the publishing of the Communist Manifesto, Uranus and Pluto, you bet. The last time that our boys there got into position was from, you know, like 1960 to 1972. I don't know. Did anything important happen then? Like civil rights or the moon landing or the next wave of feminism, abortion rights, and so much technological advancement that it's still terrifying. And that's just in my corner of the world. This happened everywhere. This covers things like the events that led up to the Iranian Revolution, the Cold War. China was going through a lot of stuff in this era. So this just happens every single time these events really break out and make astronomical changes to our world. Uranus and Pluto happen to be there. And so it's not so much that they are causing this, but they are marking a certain point in time when we obviously decide that things have to change. There's another planet that seems to mark very particular times in each of our individual lives. So Uranus and Pluto is affecting, society as a whole. And I don't know, but I'm pretty sure Uranus and Pluto are going to be coming around again because shit's getting scary out there. But but they are so far out that their cycles are much longer. In our individual lives, we can see similar changes by looking at Saturn. Oh, Saturn with its beautiful rings. It's Capricorn's home planet. It's one of our gas giants. Saturn's orbit around the Earth takes around 29-ish years. So around this time, Saturn re-enters, the same place that it was in your natal chart, the same place in the sky, the same sign, house degree, all of that. And the themes and lessons associated with Saturn really, really come to a head during this time. This period is called the Saturn Return, because it's Saturn coming on back, and is a pretty trendy topic right now. And I mostly think it's because the newest crop of astrologers and fans of astrology right now are all really approaching or having just finished their Saturn return. I'm finding people from ages like 25 to 35, 40 are very much leading the charge of this new trend of astrology. And so Saturn return is very poignant in their lives right now. Very good timing, right? Saturn return can actually be a pretty difficult time because Saturn is a pretty scary planet. Literally, Saturn represents things like our fears, our limitations and our boundaries, time and aging, our life's work and our duty, very much our duty to ourselves and to our lives, and teaching and learning. It's pretty heavy stuff. In the Little Book of Saturn, Elisa Einhorn says, there is the you before the Saturn return and the you after the Saturn return. It's that important. It's that much of a change. It's that final. Old you, goodbye. New you, hello. Sounds pretty intense, right? If you're skeptical, consider this totally anecdotal evidence. So I went through my Saturn return from February 2016 to like the beginning of December that year. And that was a big year. In that time, I released such episodes as Not Every Goddess Has a Sacred Womb, which is still one of my most listened to episodes. The First Magical Fashionistas, the Hexing Brock Turner thing happened around that time. And that's when I interviewed Lazara Firefox Allen, which was the first interview I did on the podcast. And really, that really opened up a door inside myself where I got to know my own life's purpose a little bit more. The episode that I released right after my Saturn return ended, less than a month later, was titled Goodbye 2016 and Hello Understanding. I literally was saying goodbye to myself, to a whole person. I entered the treatment program for my mental illness, like within 3 months. I entered a treatment program, I got on medication, I started meditating. That's when I talked about the problem with chronic positivity and feeling afraid to accept that you might need help or that you might be ill or that you might need a problem. I faced a whole bunch of fears, a lot of being ill, of being judged. I had been totally Saturned. It just, I was crushed. Playtime was over, but it was very good for me. I'm doing a lot better now, obviously. Saturn return can sound super scary because change can be scary. I mean, I'm not going to lie, change is always a little bit scary. But for new things to come about, there has to be some destruction. You can't just keep filling your life with new stuff. You have to get rid of old stuff. Just like Marie Kondo. Oh my God, are you guys watching it? I'm going to have to do a whole episode about how much I love her, but later. So you have to clear out the old and get new stuff. So this is good. this is a good shift. Plus, I mean, we're young, y'all. You're young, you're tough, you got all the time in the world. So now's a really good time to kind of experiment with careers, learn your limits and boundaries and learn to enforce them. Start gathering up those building blocks for that foundation of who you want to be and claim a little bit of your independence. It's a time to grow up and to mature and to choose who you want to be for the next, 29-ish years. If you know where Saturn appears in your chart, you can also steer into the skid, so to speak. Saturn is in Sagittarius in my chart. And that means that my return period, according to the little book of Saturn, would have featured things like gloom and depression, struggles with depression, finding balance in my emotions, extreme self-denial and keeping good things for myself, figuring out my life's purpose and work and thinking about that a lot, connecting with other people and studying other cultures, and a deep-seated need for freedom. My house placement of Saturn in my chart also speaks to my need during that time to find my own way of working and earning money and to reassess how I value things. And not just things, but value in general, how I value people and experiences, what things I place value on. Hindsight's 2020, right? Like, I'm telling you, that's exactly the things that I dealt with. Some of them publicly on the show. You can go back and listen to a few of those episodes and you can really, really see, like, definitely those checkpoints. It would have been really nice to know all of this stuff before, so thanks, universe. Unfortunately, this book was just released, 2018? Yeah, so I missed it, but that's okay. Because if you're about to go through your Saturn return, or maybe you're in it or just coming out of it, you can get a great heads up from this little book. So The Little Book of Saturn by Aliza Einhorn. And if you tune in next Thursday, you can listen to Aliza and I talk about Saturn and astrology in general. It's a really, really fun interview. I loved it. And I'm so excited for you guys to hear it. And that will talk even more about Saturn return and some of the other parts of your birth chart and how to be prepared and make the most of your Saturn return time. But first, let's do a little book review of Shadows. So I gave this book 5 crystal balls out of 5, and you can find the full review on my website at thefatfeministwitch.com. This tiny little book is so packed with information that it will make your head spin. There's so much in here. Not only will it help you understand your fears and limitations, like I said, but it can help you read your entire birth chart, not just Saturn. I highly recommend actually having a copy of your own chart handy while reading it to serve as some really great examples. It's easier to get some of the concepts when you're looking at it right there. Plus, you'll be learning your chart. I'll post a link in the description for the episode so that you guys can get your own free birth chart calculated. So Saturn is often referred to as the taskmaster of the zodiac, and it rules things, like I said, like limitations and boundaries and time and duty, karma, discipline, and fear, which Aliza points out in the book very strongly right away. It represents your fear. It teaches us hard lessons, but this book is really great because even though it's about this very kind of heavy planet and topic, it's still a very fun and loving down-to-earth way. It makes you want to learn more about Saturn. She takes this really heavy astrological topic and makes it really exciting. It makes you just, it got me really hooked on astrology. I'm not going to lie. It totally got me hooked because now I got to know everything about my chart, right? The first part of the book gives you a really great overview of what astrology is and what it isn't. And some of the basics like birth charts and planets and houses and that stuff. Even if you're familiar with astrology, you'll find this section really, really well written and engaging, so I actually recommend not skipping it. Then we finally get into the meat and potatoes, or hydrogen and helium. That's a space joke. It's not very funny. Sorry. So not only does she explain what Saturn's deal is, but she gives you reasons why you should care, which is important. Saturn's one of those planets that I feel like a lot of people, we don't really want to think about it because it's scary stuff. But this book actually makes you want to dive right in. She explains Saturn and the signs and houses. So what Saturn in your chart means. And most importantly, she goes into great detail about everyone's second favorite metaphysical boogeyman, which is the Saturn return. Everyone's first favorite metaphysical boogeyman is obviously Mercury retrograde, by the way. As I said, Saturn return is a pretty hot topic right now. And in the book, she really, really explains how it works. The fact that we have three Saturn returns in our life, depending on how long you live, which is really interesting. How to work with each one, the types of lessons you might be faced with, depending on your sign and your house placement, and how to calculate your Saturn return time, what to expect, all of that stuff. It's really, really interesting. And it really, like I said, it really, really got me hooked. And part of that is this quote, this one part of the book on page 10, she says, "Astrology is the lens through which we view the world in our lives. Astrology is how I speak, the language I use to explain a bad day, a bad year, a good day, a good year. Astrology lovers track their lives and experiences, past, present, and future, through the movements and meanings of the stars." And I love that because I feel like, you know, if you're not into astrology, even if you're a magical person or a witch, replace astrology with magic or with spirituality or with any of this. You track your lives and experiences through nature, and the stars are nature. It's a really, really great book is what I'm saying. So I really recommend The Little Book of Saturn by Aliza Einhorn so that you can learn a little bit more about your Saturn return, but also, you know, get that astrology bug to bite you on the ass. It'll really get you started if you are interested in learning more about astrology. Wow. So that was a lot of stuff, eh? Astrology can seem kind of confusing. Don't feel bad if astrology is confusing. It's a very vast topic. It's also very mathy. Math is not my strong suit, so astrology's taken me a while. But there's just so much fun stuff you can learn with astrology. And the stuff that I talked about today, I mean, this barely breaks the surface of just Western astrology. There are other astrologies. In China, India, the Middle East, and the Southern Hemisphere, astrology can be entirely different. There are entirely different, you know, zodiac wheels. There are different constellations everywhere. It's a whole different animal. And it's an animal that I am currently totally obsessed with. I'm really going through an astrological time here. So in The Witch and Bitch, for January and February, we're talking astrology. And we're reading The Essential Book of Practical Astrology by April Elliott Kent, Big Sky Astrology. And I've really fallen in the rabbit hole here, my dudes. So you can expect a lot more posts and reviews and episodes about astrology in the future. I even have a blog post about magic rocks from space. I love space. So that'll be real fun for the next little while. And that starts, you know, next week. Next week I have more astrological content coming up. I want you to listen to this interview with Aliza. She's such a cool person and she's a really interesting astrologer. And we didn't just talk Saturn. We talk a lot about personal astrology, about reading your birth chart, and how astrology can help you study your personality. If you want to learn more about some of the topics I discussed today and check out some of the resources, I'll be putting a list in the description on my web and on my website so you can figure out your own relationship to the stars. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. If you like the show, I would love it if you'd subscribe and review the show on iTunes or whatever platform you're using, and visit me online at thefatfeministwitch.com or on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. If you want to support the show, there are a few ways to contribute. You can go to my website and buy me a coffee to make a small one-time donation. Thank you. If you're a witchy business, author, artist, or podcast, and you would like to advertise your services on my show, you can go to advertisecast.com/thefatfeministwitch to get prices and more information about that. You can also join The Witch and Bitch, which is a private monthly membership program for listeners where we read books together and we study witchy topics and have discussions. We have regular live meetups. lately we've been watching like movies and TV together, and I share exclusive content. It's $10 a month, and you can go to patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch to sign up and join today. If there are any astrological questions you have or topics that you want me to cover in the next month of future episodes here on the show, please feel free to send me any message on social media or by emailing them to me at fatfeministwitch@gmail.com. There is no stupid question. So people have been saying they want to hear, well, Saturn return. People want to hear about the 12th house, about lunar nodes, about moon signs, rising signs, about, you know, celebrity astro charts, all that stuff. So there's no silly topic to cover, and I'd love to hear what you want to know. So have a wonderful week, everyone, and I hope you'll tune in a week from today for my interview with Aliza Einhorn, the author of The Little Book of Saturn, which is available now from Wiser Books on Amazon, and if it's not in your local witchy shop, you can recommend it.